All right, we're in parallel world again. Today we're going to talk about some researchy stuff, chess. Who are you?
So my name is Chris Stern. I'm an estet working on a software
estet,
software development engineer in test.
Excellent.
So I'm basically I'm working on an incubation project down the hall, software transactional memory, which I think will be you might be sharing later on. Mm-hmm. I came and met these guys and learned about chess, and I love it, and I'm here to give moral support and guidance.
Excellent.
Hey, my name is Rahul Badu. I'm a test lead on Concurrency Runtime Team.
Yep, you've been on Channel 9 before, and
yes.
In fact, in that conversation, you mentioned there are tools that are being created that you didn't talk about.
Yes,
so we're talking about
today. We're going to talk about the actual tool, and we have the researchers behind the tool.
Sure.
Hi, I'm Madan Misawathi, and together with Shaz, both of us, we developed Chess, which is a concurrency analysis tool for finding and reproducing Heisenbugs. That's what we'll be talking about.
Heisenbugs,
today.
We want to talk about that.
Sure. And I'm Shaz Qadir, and I did what Madan just explained.
Excellent. So before we continue, let's talk a little bit about the sort of the global problem.
Sure.
So concurrency, it's hard to test concurrency. Usually you have to use kind of, you know, I wouldn't say overkill, but just, you know, running stress tests for 5 weeks is kind of lame. And then when you actually find the bugs, they're hard to reproduce.
Right.
So let's talk about what you guys have done and the space.
Okay, you want to go, Madan?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you know, in a concurrent program, there are lots of threads, and the behavior of the program actually depends on how the threads interleave. And unfortunately, when you run the program today, that interleaving is not in your control. And so you run the program takes one interleaving and crashes, and so you find a bug. Then you run it again, you don't get the same interleaving, and so it's very difficult to reproduce. And what is more annoying is that there might be these rare interleavings that don't show up during your testing that might have bugs in them. And so you can have your program that is sort of well-tested, well-stress-tested, you know, can still fail because in the field, those rare interleavings might, maybe explode, and so your program might crash. And so essentially what Chess is able to do is it gives you, the user, the control of the interleavings the program takes. Mm-hmm. So when Chess attaches to a program and then takes over the scheduling of all the threads in your program, and then Chess can schedule the threads along the different interleavings. And so the way Chess works is that it takes your program, runs it again and again in a loop, and every time you run the program, we take a different interleaving. And that's how we get our systematic exploration. And once, if a particular interleaving finds a bug, then Chess can reproduce that interleaving to help you, reproduce a bug and also help you debug the bug.
Excellent. And you guys actually found some bugs in Singularity and PLINK. Using this. Has this been run against Windows and Office and other really super complicated systems?
So we have run Chess along a set of programs, and Chess comes with a testing methodology, and most of our experience has been with the BCP team here. So these guys have, they are our sort of our champions of Chess. They have taken over Chess, and then they have used it for their internal testing. So they can tell about some of the tools on which they have applied Chess on.
Excellent.
You want to go? Yeah. So again, I'm working on software transactional memory. The key point of it, right, is to is just littered with with concurrency. It's all about concurrency. And so we're trying to implement this really hard thing, and then I'm supposed to help test it. I actually started along with this type of, we had the same problem. Originally, we were thinking about it in terms of this, I guess we call it hope-based testing, right? The stress testing referred to it, right? It's I'm going to write some test, I'm going to run it on N machines, and I'm going to hope that it finds this, this horrible Heisenbug interleaving. So from a test perspective, it's disturbing on two cases. One, it's costly because to get really good coverage, I need to go and actually buy a whole bunch of different machines. Right today, even in some of our test labs, we have just, you know, hundreds of different builds of every, you know, machine, you know, that you can find to try to help reproduce these types of interleavings. So that's obviously, you know, doesn't really scale. The second problem that we have is confidence, right? Again, if I say, you know, Charles, we've run this for, you know, 30 days, and we haven't found a single crash. Are you confident that we can ship it?
No.
Why not?
Because on day 31, one of these Heisen bugs may appear.
Exactly.
And screwed.
Exactly. And unfortunately, day 31 usually happens on the customer's box, right? And then, you know, and they find it all the time, and, you know, that's just horrible. And so, so as a tester, my job is I need to be able to sleep at night after we ship this code. And so I'm looking for confidence, some measurable amount of confidence to say something more than it hasn't crashed in 30 days on end machines. And so that's really where for me chess came in, because it really provides, it takes the, you know, in concurrency we use the word non-determinism a lot, right? And that's really what it helps. It takes that non-determinism out of the loop.
Yes.
It lets me sit down and reason. I write my tests in a certain way as instructed by chess. In these small little snippets, unit test style. But then I can run them in chess, and I'm guaranteed a full, you know, coverage of the interleaving space for a certain bound. And then I can say, yes, I know that, you know, I've run these tests. I've run, you know, we'll see some of these tests in a little bit, but, you know, I've run for a context bound of 2. I know that my tests are completely clean. And I know that. I can say that. I can say that tomorrow, and it's not tied to the hardware. It's not tied to, you know, I'm running on an Intel machine or an AMD machine with N, you know, 16 cores. It doesn't matter, right? I can run this on a single-threaded box, and it still gives me the exact same deterministic repro. And for me, it's confidence. That's really the thing that comes out of it that gets me excited.
So actually, there was something very profound about what Chris said, and I wanted to call out to that.
Cool.
He said that using chess, we are taking the non-determinism out of concurrency testing. And this is a really important point, because as we move into the era of multi-cores, we expect that there will be a lot more programmers writing concurrent programs. If you look at the gurus of concurrent programming, their number one advice to future concurrent programmers is don't do it. Why is that? The reason they say it is because it's considered black magic, concurrent programming.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been black magic for the longest time, and I think primarily it is because concurrency is intrinsically associated with uncontrollable non-determinism. It just makes it very hard to develop programs. Imagine that, supposing you were writing your program and you gave it an input 10, okay? And you run the program, sometimes it gives you an answer 42, sometimes it gives you an answer 43, and you can't even say why is it returning an answer 43, because there's no way to control that behavior. If I was faced with a programming system like that, I would not like it. And so I think that what is needed to take the magic out of concurrent programming is to give to the programmer the same amount of control that programmers have come to expect from sequential programming. And then the mystique of concurrent programming will no longer be there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very good. And it's important to call out, just to stress, that this is an execution time component. Now, he mentioned...
It would be a dynamic analysis tool, according to the classification. But they also combine with model checking. So you get the thoroughness of model checking, but and you run it with real tests.
So. Mm-hmm. So you use this in your day-to-day life?
Yes.
Both of you.
Yeah, so the things, you know, just to add to what they've already mentioned, the things that really attracts me to this tool is the 100% repro. It's a dream for anybody who's writing tests. You know, you just throw in a unit test, and if it fails tomorrow in the lab, I can repro it 100% of the times. The other thing is it's pay for play. He talked a little bit about context bounding. I'm sure Madan and Chaz will go in a little bit more, which is I can say for, you know, prize zero tests or priority zero tests or the nightly tests, just run with max context bounding of 2 or 3, and this should give me a fairly good amount of confidence that, you know, with the basic interleaving, we're kind of bug-free. And when we have more cycles in the lab over the weekend, sometimes 2-week runs or something like that, I can just increase the context bound to something like 5 or 10, and it gives me more interleavings. So I can control how much interleavings I want, and it's kind of pay-for-play. So if I want some quick results, I reduce the context bound. If I want, you know, some deeper coverage, then I increase the context bound.
Excellent.
So maybe we can go for that demo right now?
Sure, and then we need to talk about exactly what this thing is. I think people understand it.
Okay.
Cool, let's do the demo.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
All right, I'm going to point it at this, and we'll rock and roll.
Yeah, okay. So we have a... Shall I do the run DLL demo first, Mother?
Yeah.
Okay. So, let's see. Okay, so the demo is going to be based on this very simple example. It's like the hello world of concurrency.
Okay, this C++ program.
Yeah, it's a C++ program that implements a class called bank account.
Okay.
Actually, it's called account. And this class is supposed to be thread safe. It provides three different methods, read, deposit, and withdraw, which are shown here. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that you can initialize the account. You can create an account with any amount of money. You pass the value in the constructor. And after that, you can have multiple threads that call these three methods, read, deposit, and withdraw concurrently. Okay? And we want parallelism in there. So we expect that even if multiple threads are running at the same time, it is as if one thread went at a time. Right? So to capture that kind of expectation, we have a little test case here. So in this test case, we create an account with $1,000. And then we create a child thread that's going to run this function that withdraws money. So the main routine is called withdraw thread here. And in the meantime, this parent thread deposits $5,000. So let's take a look at what the behavior of withdraw thread is. So withdraw thread tries to withdraw $1,000 from the bank account. Okay, so the expectation is that at the end, once the child thread is finished, and you notice that the parent is waiting here for the child thread to finish on this line, then the value in the bank account is going to be 10,000. Sorry. Oh, I see. So you start with 1,000. You withdraw 1,000 and then you deposit 5,000. So it should be 5,000. So that's the expectation here. We get the value of the that's in the bank account. We compare it to 5,000. If the result is true, then we print success. Otherwise we print failure. Okay. Now, what I want to do is mimic what stress testing would do. So what does stress testing do? It just runs this program on the normal OS scheduler many, many times. So to mimic that, we have a program, we have created this little program, run DLL, that takes a DLL and executes the run function in it again and again, repeatedly inside a loop. So there are a couple of, and it prints out a couple of visualizations. One is that, of course, the visualization that you get by default, which is the thing that is being printed on the screen. So the important thing to notice here is that every single time we print success here. So the by default, run DLL runs the run test function inside balance.dll 100 times. And every single time, the test succeeded. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this could be for one of two reasons, right? It could be that, you know, it tried a whole bunch of different schedules, and that's what we're hoping for, but every one of those schedules was actually a good schedule, not a buggy schedule. But what I'm going to show you now is that things are much worse than that for stress testing. So in this visualization, we have each column represents one execution of this program, right? And each column is color-coded. So purple represents one thread, and green represents the other thread. And the visualization means, so we have a box to represent a transition by one thread. So a column shows, so for example, the column that is currently highlighted shows that there were 1, 2, 3, 4 actions by the purple thread, followed by 5 actions by the green thread, and followed by 3 actions by the purple thread. And the interesting thing to notice here is that every single schedule was identical. There is no variation in the scheduling, right? So this means from a testing point of view, stress testing is not very good, right? Because there is very little scheduling variation. So that's why people try to artificially load their machines with other activities, try to force the scheduler to create other weird schedules. So we can try to mimic that also. So we can give this parameter slash stress to run DLL. This tries to create a lot more activity in the process while still tracking the events that are being performed by those two threads. In the event that when you load the scheduler, weird schedule will show up. So as you can see that now we are paying a much higher cost in the amount of time taken for the testing. Success is being printed out at a much smaller rate, but still there is no failure, right? So this is not good. So what we want to do is improve the state of the art using systematic testing with chess. So once this thing finishes, then I'm going to show you how to find a bug which I know is lurking in that code and then reproduce it using chess. We're almost there here. No failure yet.
Yeah, and also you can see that the CPU is 100%.
Yeah, here.
So we're just bringing this laptop to a halt.
Right. Okay, so let's take a look at the visualization here. Did all that stress testing create any scheduling variation? It says 1 out of 87. We have about 10 more, 11, 12 more schedules to go. Okay, so once those finish. So we finally saw some scheduling variation. This one.
Okay.
But that's about it. Here's another one. Okay. So that concludes this part of the demo. We saw a little bit of scheduling variation, but not enough to cause the bug to manifest itself. So now I'm going to show you how to do chess testing as opposed to stress testing.
Great.
Okay, so we have... which one?
There's a file called chess.
Here?
Yeah.
Chess.bat? Okay. Okay. So This bat file contains an invocation to chess. So chess loads balance.dll, and again it runs run test. The run same function that was being run earlier repeatedly, but this time it guarantees that every run is going to take a different thread schedule. So although it's not visible here, that those three successes that were printed out were because of three different schedules. Chess guarantees it. And then when it's doing the systematic testing, the very fourth schedule that it generated had a failure where the bank lost $5,000. Okay, so, but this is not good enough because we have to be able to reproduce the bug so that we can debug it as well. So what we can do is we can say, we can give this option to chess slash repro, and we can also say break at context switches. So the idea is that by repro, when I tell chess to repro, it's going to not do the search anymore. It's just going to generate the last schedule, which caused the failure to happen. And then we have also this vocabulary around debugging. What we have discovered is that unexpected context switches or preemptions, they are the typical causes of bugs. So if you examine the code around a preemption point, then it gives you a very good indication of what the cause of the bug is. So what we can do, we can ask chess to launch the debugger when it is doing the repro and insert breakpoints automatically at all the context switches. So you don't have to monkey around trying to do that manually by freezing and then starting again threads as you would do today in the Visual Studio debugger.
So just to bring this home, again, remember, you know, I harken back to the I've run it for 30 days in stress labs on hundreds of machines. If we go and we do that and we actually do get that, we do find this horrible bug on the 31st day. which is great, but now how do I capture that precise, that exact interleaving? How do I give that to a dev? You know, what's the steps that I capture in the bug report? You know, run it for 31 days and wait for it to break. That's really bad. And so we kind of address that today, right? We run with the machines in the lab, we'll run under the debugger, and you can take memory dumps and these kinds of things. But really, this is just kind of, it's still, you know, not as great as you'd like it. And even then, right, it's a point in time. It's this, the dump of what had happened that day. I can't, you know, what if I change it? You know, did I fix it or not? I don't know. I got to wait 31 days. That's actually exactly what Chess helps us do, is that not only will it find it faster, but I can give this replay file, and the dev can rerun it hundreds of times, right? Nice. They can make the change and run it again. That is, again, one of the, you know, best parts about this tool.
Absolutely. Quick to market fixes.
Right.
You don't have to stay up all night.
Right.
That'll be good for our Mountain Dew population.
Exactly.
This is interesting. So one of the things that come up in my mind as we're talking about this is the notion of false positives, right? So exceptions are going to happen, weird things are going to happen based on any number of things that may not really be reproducible errors by design. I mean, it could just be Windows Update is doing something in the background, a driver is being installed, Office is running, something else is happening, I'm doing something with a movie. I mean, you're not going to really be able to reproduce that. So let's talk a little bit about false positives.
Sure. So one of the things that Chess does is that, you know, there is a notion of a program, mm-hmm. and we control all threads in the program. And if a bug will show up because of interleavings in your program, mm-hmm. in the threads in your program, then Chess will find it. And so, in the sense, Chess is guaranteed, it's guaranteed to find that. And also, the second thing is that any bug that Chess produces is actually a real bug. In the sense, it can happen in the wild. So we do not introduce any new behavior. And so any behavior that Chess explores is actually possible on the real machine. And so in that sense, any bug we produce is actually a real bug.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So think about it more like, you know, typically developers write their unit tests to make sure that every line of code is tested. Mm-hmm. So you run the same test. What Chess is doing underneath is it's producing different schedule to run the same test again and again. So Chess, in that sense, will not introduce false positives. It's up to the test is still doing the same thing. It's still verifying the same thing. Mm-hmm. All Chess is doing is producing different interleavings. That's what Chess does. Right. And so in that sense, Chess will not produce any false positives.
Okay. So, I mean, I understand that it's dealing only with the code at hand. Mm-hmm. So only the threads that I create in my binary. Mm-hmm. But my point was that because we live in the world of shared memory, uh-huh. there's other binaries that are running that are doing threading.
Right, right,
you know,
right.
They have their own threads. The processor is going to be doing what it's doing. The operating system is doing what it's doing. Uh-huh. And so I guess what I meant by false positive was, let's say I find a bug using your tool. Did that bug happen because of my code or because my code is running in shared memory? Mm-hmm. And something else is doing something strange.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's all I meant. And I realize that you guys aren't a panacea for the nightmare of shared memory.
Right.
That's not going
right. So in this sense, if you have multiple processes that are, you know, using the same shared memory, then Chess will not be able to reproduce bugs that come because of that.
Right.
So what we assume is that, you know, there is a single process solution. Your test and your application live in a single process. And then, you know, it's sort of isolated from everybody else. And then Chess can actually guarantee repro in that
cool.
setting.
So let's move along. Sorry for the randomness.
Sure,
but,
sure, perfect.
Let's move along to exactly how this works.
Okay.
Okay, the demo is cool. Let's talk about how does it work.
Okay, sure. So we can skip the repro part.
Actually, yeah. I think it's my personal thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's very interesting to actually finish the demo.
The demo?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right. So in this demo, what we have done is we have asked to just to recapitulate a little bit where we left the demo. Chess reported a bug in the balance example on the fourth execution that it explored. Hmm. I ran Chess again with the slash repro switch, and also told it to break at context switches.
Okay.
When I did that, basically the Visual Studio pop-up happened, which says that, oh, your program has encountered a breakpoint. This is no different from what would have happened if you were running the program and something there was a breakpoint in there or there was a crash in there if you were not running chess at all, okay? Mm-hmm. So the user experience is exactly the same that you would expect. The only thing chess introduces in this mix is reproducibility, even in the presence of concurrency.
Okay.
So now we can examine the breakpoint. So if you remember the test, we had two threads. The parent thread was doing a deposit, and the child thread was doing a withdraw. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we are looking at an execution in which the parent thread started, it created the child, and just before it was about to enter this critical section to do a deposit, there was a preemption. Okay? So that's why it's breaking here. And at this point, we can see where the different threads are. For example, this is the parent thread, and the child thread hasn't quite started right now. Okay? So now we can hit F5, and chess encountered a second breakpoint. Okay, what is the second breakpoint? We can take a look at it. Wrong stack frame. Okay, so now the first thread went and blocked. The parent thread went and blocked, waiting for the child thread to finish. The child thread started, and it's about to do a withdraw, but just before it enters this critical section, it got preempted. So look at the bug. The bug is really in the withdraw method. So in the withdraw method, first you do a read, which in fact is protected by the lock itself. But the point about the read is that you enter the critical section, you read the balance, but you leave the critical section. So there's a window here after the critical section is left and before you re-enter it to update the balance, where if a preemption occurs, it can do bad things. And that's exactly what chess found. So if there's a preemption at this point, then the preemption goes to gives control to the parent thread. It goes and does the deposit. And now the value that is in R is stale. So for example, the value that is in R is 1,000, as you can see there. But if I just let it go, then after the deposit, it becomes 6,000. And this thread will come back and update the balance, thinking that the current value of the balance is 1,000. And that's how you lose the deposit of $5,000. Mm-hmm. So basically, by doing this kind of systematic exploration, chess was able to find the precise places where the preemption occurs. Then it will cause the bug to happen.
Excellent.
And every time I run chess with the same two options, slash repro, slash break at context switches, it will do exactly the same thing. There is no more non-determinism.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, I will use this demo to start answering your question of how chess works.
Cool.
One interesting point about this example is that even if you ran this via a race detection tool, it wouldn't be able to catch the race because the memory is actually protected by critical section. Is this an anti-pattern? The difference, take a critical section, either read or write a memory, let the critical section go, but then they preserve the state of the memory that they read and then do further operations based on that. So even if you ran this example via a race detection tool, you will not be able to catch it. But because of the way they interleave it, the bug is actually exposed. I think that's a nice example.
Sure.
Okay. So... let's see, I'm trying to hook the debugger again, and it's not hooking up right now. That's okay.
I'm surprised the demos work this long. Usually live demos don't work by design.
Check now. It's bin.chess.exe / repro / break.c.
Colon C.
Yes. Sometimes what happens is that when we create the breakpoint, we're not able to hook to the Visual Studio. But hopefully if we do it right now like this.
So while you guys are setting this up, so one other question that most people have is, does this only work for native? Does it work for managed? And, the most popular question. So.
Sure. Chess works both for native code and for managed code. We are going to make a release of Chess under the auspices of DevLabs, which is a new initiative started by a developer division.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so Chess can take both unmanaged Win32 ESA mode programs, or it can take a .NET program as well.
Okay. Now, you said user mode. What about drivers, kernel mode?
So in principle, the ideas will work, but we don't have the implementation yet.
Yes. Fair enough.
So we are actually currently looking at, you know, what's the best way to integrate Chess inside the kernel. And, in fact, I'll actually go into the details right now of how Chess works. And Chess works very similar to App Verifier. And so the answer to the kernel is to have a version of Chess that works very similar to the driver verifier. You know, it's the same technology that works. So, let me actually, I was actually, planning to use the debugger, but that's not working for now, right now. So the important thing here is that the way Chess works is by DLL shimming. It's similar to the way App Verifier works, is that when App Verifier attaches to your program, it sort of rewrites all your import address tables so that whenever you call into, let's say, create thread, instead of calling create thread, you actually call into the App Verifier version of create thread, so it can do some logging. And Chess works very similar to that. And in fact, what you see here in the picture here is actually the Chess implementation, the Chess version of Enter Critical Section. So whenever the program actually makes a call into Enter Critical Section, we do the DLL shimming so that the control comes here. Okay, and we need to do this for every threading and synchronization API that your program uses. So we cover all the many of the synchronizations in kernel 32, that is the Win32 API, and those which are present in the MSVCRT, the C runtime. So you can see what happens is that, the goal of Chess is that whenever a thread is created, if you call create thread, you call the similar function like a wrapper underscore create thread. And then, we know, all the threads which are present in your program. And when one of the threads makes a call into the critical section, so what you can see what happens here is that this is a callback to Chess saying that, this thread is actually making a synchronization variable access. That's very crucial for us because critical sections are synchronization variables. And this tells Chess that, here's an opportunity to do a context switch. So whenever the program does a critical section, we call into Chess and Chess will decide, am I going to allow this thread to acquire this lock or not? Or am I going to switch to another thread? And that's what happens here. And if you see this, what happens, this code is actually converting a critical enter critical section into a try version. Because, we don't want the thread to block in the critical section. So because Chess needs to control all the threads, and so, we want Chess to be blocking, we want threads to be blocking on our, under our control. That's why we do a try to see if the critical section is indeed available. If it is available, we actually, return. If it is not, we actually, this is a notification to Chess saying that, hey, the critical section is not available, so this thread cannot be scheduled till somebody does leave critical section. And so this is how we actually get the guts of your program. Mm-hmm. And the high level, there are a lot of details into how Chess works, but the one thing you should remember is that we control all your threads, and we control the scheduling of your threads. And the way we do it is that we actually artificially insert a semaphore for each of the threads. And so by default, all threads are blocked on that semaphore. And Chess uses the algorithm to wake up one particular semaphore. So if you want to schedule thread 5, we just do a up on the semaphore number 5. And so the thread number 5 will run. And the nice thing is that we have sort of hijacked all the scheduling control from the OS without modifying the OS, right? Because from the OS perspective, OS only sees only one thread which is enabled, and the operating system has to schedule that thread. And so our algorithms essentially map to figuring out, at this point there are 5 threads, of which like 3 are blocked on unavailable resource, let's say critical section is not available, and of the remaining 2, Chess will decide, whom is going to schedule. And the nice thing is that is how where we explore the non-determinism too. So if of the 5 threads, if 3 are disabled, and if there are 2 which are enabled, the first time you run the test, Chess will explore the first one. And the second time, you know, we'll explore a different future. You know, we can actually explore the other threat. And, you know, so that's where we sort of get our systematic behavior, is that we sort of know exactly what are the possible behaviors possible in your program and systematically enumerate each one of them. And that's where, you know, a lot of our effort goes in actually exploring the state space of all possible behaviors of your program.
So that explains the systematic part of it. So how do you get the thoroughness of model checking? So where does the thoroughness of model checking
come from? Sure. So maybe I'll go to the board.
Good.
So, you know, in order to explain the state space of, you know, of a program and how Chess explored it, I'll start with a very simple program. Let's say that you have two threads, T and U. And for now, let's say they're both executing...
Can you use a black one? Because it's hard to see on the camera.
Okay, sure.
Thanks.
Okay, there's a black T and a black U. Yeah. And... So let's say there's a shared variable x, which is initialized to 0, and this thread does an increment. You know, assume it's an interlocked increment, so it's atomic. You know?
Okay.
And let's say this guy is atomically multiplying that by 2, right? So for our purposes, there are two threads, each of them doing two instructions each. Right? Now I'm going to explore all possible behavior of this program. In fact, there are six behaviors of this program. So the way Chess works is that initially when the test harness creates these two threads, Chess is going to take control of these guys. And in the initial state, the X's, I mean, there are two possibilities. Both T and U are enabled. And so there are two possible futures, right? So what Chess is going to do is that it's going to, you know, arbitrarily pick one of them, let's say T. Is going to run T for one step, right? So initially, X is 0, and if T increments X, X becomes 1 here, and there are still two threads, right? So Chess knows that there are two threads enabled, and so there are two possible choices, but Chess is arbitrarily going to pick one of them. Let's say it picks T. And so now we come to a state in which X is 2, but you see the thread T has finished. And so Chess knows that. And so there are only one thread which is enabled. And so Chess has no choice but to run this thread. So it'll run U for one step. X will become 4. And there's only one thread left. And then you come to the state in which X becomes 8. And then there are, you know, there are no threads. It's an empty set, right? There are no, both T and U have finished. And so this tells Chess that, you know, okay, the test run is finished. And now you Now, the next time you run the test, Chess remembers this path and also knows that there were these two possible choices. So it's going to use its search algorithms to say, okay, am I going to search this future or this future? Let's say Chess chose to use this future. Right? So now we come to a state in which T has executed one step. It's right here. I mean, T is about to execute here. And U is about to execute this instruction. Right? And let's say I executed U. And now X would become 2 because it's incrementing X, I mean, it's doubling X. And there'll be two threads, right? U will come here, and there'll be two more threads. And so there are two choices, and Chess is going to arbitrarily pick one of them. Let's say it picks U, and now X is going to become 4, and then U finishes, right? And there's only one thread, T, and it'll execute T for a step, and X will become 5. And so after this, it knows that, you know, I've explored these two futures, but there are still these two futures to explore, and then Chess is going to say, it's going to arbitrarily pick one of them, and then going to keep doing this all over. And if you actually build a state space, you can actually show that there are six possible futures. I've done this so many times, so I almost know this by heart. So you can see
that's
that.
That's beautiful. So now this tells us how thorough... Based on
right.
model checking, how thorough Chess is.
Yes.
Now, how do you guys overcome the classic problem of state space exploration?
Yes.
Okay.
Right, right. My programs tend to have more than two statements and two threads.
Wonderful, right? So this is, you know, So this kind of systematic behavior is what in the research world we call model checking, mm-hmm. right? Because we take a program and then systematically enumerate all possible behaviors. And as you know, Chris and Rahul rightly pointed out, you know, for a simple program there are six behaviors, right? Imagine if for office, right? How many behaviors we're going to see, right? So let's do some simple math now. Don't get scared. So let's say if there are
math isn't scary.
Yeah, n is the number of threads, mm-hmm. right? And then k is the number of steps. Okay, I'm going to call them steps, and for now, assume a step is same as an instruction. Okay, and so in this case, there are n is 2 and k is actually 2 plus 2. K is 2, right? So k steps each. Okay. Now, if you enumerate all possible behaviors, the number of executions is n raised to the power n times k. Right? So it is exponential in both n and in k. For example, if n is 2 and k is, let's say, 100, so this will be 2 to the power 200, which is it's a very, very large number. So if you gave me, if you gave chess a program with 2 threads and 100 instructions, chess will run till the end of the universe trying to explore all possible behaviors to see if your program is correct or not, right? So that is definitely a very, very large number. And if you just did this, like the way I told you, chess would never finish on your programs, which is not what we want to do, right? And so the whole research behind model checking is to encounter this problem, which is called the state space explosion problem. And that's what, you know, we've been working on for the past 20, 30 years, trying to solve this problem. So there are lots of techniques that people have come up with. And we have certain techniques designed specifically for chess. And the one thing that I'm going to explain today is called preemption bounding. Preemption bounding. Okay. So this is sort of like a prioritization strategy. It says that given a program, not all behaviors are equally interesting. You want to find those behaviors that are likely to find bugs first. Right? And you know, Shaz actually briefly talked about it during the demo. Most of the concurrency bugs happen because of unexpected context switches or preemptions. Right? In the balance example, you know, when the programmer wrote the withdraw method, he did the made a call to read, and then store it into a temporary variable, and then grab the lock to update the balance. And he didn't realize that there was a window of opportunity here where if there's a preemption, then the variable can get stale, right? So most concurrency bugs are of this form, in which, you know, there are two instructions like this, and then if the preemption happens right between them, you know, you have a bug. Otherwise, you don't. And so chess, you know, what it says is that, you know, let me systematically explore all these preemption points. And so chess, in its exploration strategy, has something called context bound, which is like, you know, bounds the number of preemptions. Okay. And in fact, we can show that for if n is the number of threads and k is the number of steps, if you also say, if you put c to be the number of preemptions, then number of executions with c preemptions is order n squared k the whole to the c times n to the n. Right? So you can actually show that this is indeed the case. So what happened is that it is still exponential in C and N, but the important thing is this K, which is the number of instructions your thread execute, has actually come from the top, from the exponent, to the bottom. Okay, and this is what gives us a lot of power Because for the same case, if let's say n is 2 and k is 100, and say c is 2, then 400, so this is going to be like 400 squared times 2 to the 2, which is like, you know, which is still a big number, but not as big as this, right? And so chess is really good. I mean, this actually, what preemption bounding does is, you know, helps scale the search algorithm inside chess to large programs, programs with large k. And, you know, most of the bugs that we have found, you know, you just need one or two preemptions. You don't need like a million preemptions to find your bugs, okay? And so, I mean, that's sort of the intuition behind preemption bounding. And so the way we have used chess so far, you know, if somebody finds a Heisenbug in the wild, they actually hand it over to us to say, you know, hey, throw chess at it. Can you see if you can find it? And almost always we've been able to find it with like one preemption. Sometimes we need to work harder and run it with two preemptions. And most of the bugs that we see in practice can be found with very small number of preemptions.
Excellent.
So that's what makes chess scale to large programs. And you know, this goes back to the coverage that chess is able to do. So the way we expect to run chess is that give our unit tests, and in the daily runs, you run it with like small number of preemptions, like two or three. And then once you know, fixed all your bugs, then in the weekly runs, you can actually set up a preemption to a very large number, to 4 or 5, and you know, have it run for like a week or two. You know, so that sort of goes back to what like Rahul mentioned about pay for play. And that's what helps us achieve that.
Perfect. So one of the questions people are going to have, obviously, is how do they get their hands on this? It's in distress that this is a research tool at this point. You're mentioning Dev Labs from DevDiv, which is going to be coming out. That's where they'll get their hands on chess.
Yes. Yeah.
Perfect.
So if you're ready, if you're interested in getting your hands dirty, please go to Codebox.
External.
Yes, it has to be external.
Oh, this is... Oh,
this is Channel 9, my man.
Sorry.
Okay, so
this is Microsoft.com/chess.
Yeah, that's
fine. There's a place you can get to it. I mean, there's a research you can read about it. Yes. All the stuff I'll link to. Okay.
There's a research download also.
Okay.
My point is, I just wanted to make sure that a lot of times when we do research topics, people go, I want that. And we're like, well, you know, we're not going to support it. So the point is, this is research. They
can
play with it.
So for internal customers, you can go and get chess at this point. For external customers, I mean, I think our URL is much longer. so we'll actually see.
It'll be on the post. That's correct.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
Cool. Well, hey, you know, we are running out of time.
Okay.
We could definitely continue this for another hour.
Sure.
I think the basics have been covered.
Okay.
And I really appreciate you guys
Thank
taking
you.
The time to talk to us.
Thanks, Charles.
Great work.
Thank you, Charles.
Thanks, Charles.
Thank you.
Very
Thanks,
good.
Thanks, Charles.
Thank you.